Welcome to the Adults Corner,
where nothing's off limits.
We're going to discuss
masturbation,
anal,
butthole foreplay,
BDSM,
sex. No, we need to make that clear. I do not like things in my butthole.
How do you like this drop?
How do I like this drop?
Yeah.
Is that what you call it, a drop?
Wine? Yeah, it's wine.
That's new jargon I've never heard before. How do you like this drop a cab stuff?
Anyways, I'm trying to get Chloe a little bit lit because she's a little bit nervous because today we are talking all about Chloe, or should I call you Mistress Arabella?
You can call me Chloe, aka Mistress Arabella.
Okay, that's a long sentence. So which one do you want?
You can call me Chloe today.
Chloe. I still want to throw in that I got my period today and that you are getting your period soon and we are almost in sync, and it's because we have been around each other now for like, what, since when? Since April last year?
We should have a friendship anniversary.
Oh, what would we do?
A combined birthday.
Oh yeah, makes our birthdays are soon too. But anyways, what I was getting to was, how did we come to meet each other? You've got to explain the story because you explained it way better than me.
Well, Dana, we met because you were doing interviews for Cherry D TV's YouTube, mm-hmm. and my friend Mistress Contessa Dole recommended me to be interviewed by you. So you messaged me on Instagram, you reached out and was like, hey, Chloe, like, are you available to come in?
No, I slid into your DMs in a really sexy platonic way.
Yeah, you slid into my DMs platonically.
Sounds better when you say I slid in.
So you slid into my DMs platonically in a nice friendly way and said, Chloe, aka Mistress Arabella, would you love to come in for an interview with me? It's on this day in this location. And unfortunately, I was unavailable because I was in the Blue Mountains waiting for my sister to give birth.
Yeah.
And I did not want to miss that.
And your niece is so adorable.
She's gorgeous. She's almost one now. So, yeah, I was like, no, I'm sorry. I can't make it. So you were like, well, that's okay. I would still love to meet you. When you're back in Sydney, let's hook up for lunch. And I was like, yeah, all right. So I came back to Sydney. I was a bit hesitant to message you, to be honest. I've never told you this, but why? Like, when you first messaged me and I saw how many followers you had, I was very intimidated. I was like, I don't know. I don't know.
Come on. I'm so sick and tired of getting this intimidated bullshit.
Well, I was.
You're like a dominatrix.
Yeah, I know. But I think the idea of like people on Instagram having a lot of followers can make somebody with not many followers, they will see the person with the many followers is somehow like better than they are. So those thoughts were going through my head. It's like, oh, well, how can I impress this very successful, beautiful woman with what I have to offer? Obviously, I did in some sort of way, because when we met up and we had lunch, you offered me a job with you at Cherry D TV as a writer because you loved my writings and captions on Instagram. So that's how we met.
That's why I slid into her DMs, because she wrote good captions about sex and masturbation and everything else. And I was like, she kinky.
Yes. And I remember even what we ate at the cafe.
What?
Yes, I have.
Did you write this down in like a diary or something when we left?
No, I have a good memory.
You took a photo of the food, didn't you?
No, I ate a muesli. I ate a muesli bowl and I was like, this is the best muesli bowl I've ever eaten in my whole life. And you had... you had like a baked egg beef
slow
cooked beef with toast with eggs. It looks pretty good.
Yeah, that's good. So that'll make you go to the toilet hardcore after you have it though.
Yeah.
Great at the time.
Before I was working with you, I didn't have what you would call a quote unquote normal job. I did have normal jobs in the past, but never anything normal that lasted for more than like a couple weeks, because that just wasn't my interest before working with you. So
do you want to tell everyone what you were doing before you started working with me? Because you explain it so much better and I just like the really detailed, juicy stories, especially about buttholes.
Well, before I was on the Cherry D TV team, I was working on, I guess, building my hypnosis and NLP business, but was lacking those business skills to really get it off the ground. So it wasn't really going anywhere. I saw a few clients here and there. However, before I started with hypnosis and NLP, I was a professional dominatrix.
Yeah.
And I started my professional dominatrix career when I was 18 years old. So I was doing it for about 6 years up until I started working with you.
Dominatrix for 6 years. I can only imagine, just because I, like, my background in the adult entertainment industry, like what we talked about last episode, and everything I've experienced would be the complete opposite end of the scale. Even though we're in the same industry, we've experienced completely different things. And I always explain, I'm like, oh my God, your stories are so much more interesting than mine, because it's like the unspoken kind of things, like the fetish and the kink sides of things, that it's like really intriguing. And because a lot of the time as a dominatrix, like, sex isn't really a major part of the service that you're offering. So it's really interesting to hear what some of the people are requesting. Like, what would you say is the most commonly requested?
So as a professional mistress, there were two services that were most commonly requested. And number one was foot fetish.
Ooh.
Yes. So yeah, sucking.
Like on OnlyFans.
Yeah, so like sucking, licking, massaging, kissing the feet and toes and the legs.
So wait, I got to make this clear. They wanted to do that to you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would have clients come in and they would request foot worship. And yeah, that involved them kissing, licking, sucking, massaging my feet, toes and legs. And I got paid to receive that. And the second most popular request as a professional mistress was pegging or anal play.
Oh.
So pegging.
I would love to peg someone. But like, what was the first time, like when you peg someone for the first time, what did it feel like for you?
Honestly, when I first started as a dominatrix, it felt like I was a baby deer learning how to walk. I embarrassed myself so many times. I fumbled and like tripped over my heels all the time. I was very quiet. I didn't let my, I guess, confidence shine until probably like 3 years into the industry. It took me a while to like get out of my shell and feel confident. But the first time I ever pegged someone, I remember it. It didn't feel powerful at all because he was dirty. Like, I put it in and poo came out.
Oh.
He didn't clean himself beforehand.
They don't get cleaned at the...
Well, usually they do.
At the dungeon? No?
Usually they do.
Because you worked in a dungeon. That's what they call it.
Yes, yeah. I did work in a dungeon, and there were enemas there for us to clean the clients or the clients to clean themselves.
Yeah.
However, in the interview room, he told me that he had prepped for anal play. So we went ahead without doing it, and when I stuck it in, poo came out.
Yeah. How much poo came out? Like,
enough to cover the cock, let's just say that. It was a bit, yeah, it was really gross.
Holy,
not gonna lie.
Wait, can I just add this one story in here?
Yeah.
That I went to a bucks party. It was like the fourth job in a night. It was on a Saturday night. It was like 2 a.m. start. Mm-hmm. And we go upstairs, and the buck is like, because, you know, you collect money before you start working. And you go into a room to get changed. Mm-hmm. And I went to put my bag on the bed and sit down while I was waiting to collect my money. He's like, oh, no, don't sit on the bed. And I'm like, okay, whatever. Why? And he's like, because I just fucked this chick in the ass and she bled and there's shit everywhere on the bed.
Mm.
And I was like, holy fucking shit, dude, you're getting married for starters. That's pretty fucked up. But like, that chick clearly didn't have an enema on her either.
No.
We need to point this out, that you say that there should be some sort of like at-home procedures or something. If you're going to do anal play, there should be something put into place beforehand.
There should definitely be some preparation put in beforehand. You can buy disposable enemas from the chemist, or you can buy reusable enemas online. Not sure if you can get them in the chemist, but like most online sex stores have reusable enemas, and they're very affordable and they're super easy to use. So you can get the little fleet enemas, which are kind of like a squishy ball that a lot of people see. You just fill them up with water, put it up your butt as far as you can, squeeze all the water out, release it into the toilet, and keep doing that until the water that comes out of your butt is clean.
Yeah, because you do them kind of regularly.
I do them regularly, but not for anal sex. Every time I've done anal sex, I've never needed an enema. I've never prepped myself for anal and I've always been clean.
Yeah.
So a good way to tell if you're clean or not is just lube up your finger, stick it inside and have a little fiddle around. And if it comes out clean and you don't feel anything in there, you're good to go.
Good to go.
Yeah.
So wait, I want to go back to when you started out being a dominatrix, because like, look, if I woke up tomorrow and said, I'm going to be a dominatrix, like, how do I get started? I'm not just going to put a collar on and like some leather or latex or whatever it is and get a whip and start beating people and be like,
well,
I'm a dom.
That's good, because you know what? A lot of people do that. They just go out and buy the outfits and they say that they're a dom now without any formal classical training. I was very lucky that I was taken on board with a professional establishment that had been in business for over 30 years. And they had veteran mistresses there, or what they called senior mistresses, who I would go in to their sessions and they would show me the ropes basically. So they would show me firsthand what to do, what not to do, and I got that hands-on experience. Now it's not so easy to do that, because I know that the dungeon that I did train in, all the mistresses that work there now aren't senior mistresses. So I don't know where they've learned their skills or anything like that. But if you did want to learn how to be a professional mistress and do everything safe, sane and consensual like you should, then I recommend finding a mistress who's been working for 10 years plus and ask if she's willing to take on any apprentices.
So when you went in the room with these senior mistresses, mm-hmm. did they have to get consent from the client?
Yeah, so I wouldn't go in unless the client said it was okay, and the client would usually tip me, so I'd be paid to go in.
Well, that's always a positive, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe I will wake up tomorrow and be like, I want to learn and just go watch. Okay, I'm just joking. I'm just taking the piss. I know it sounds really disrespectful, but I would actually love to sit there and just watch.
Yeah, well.
I actually watched you kick a dude in the balls and spit in his mouth.
In public.
In public. I watched from a window. There was three of us watching from a window and so we were highly amused. I was like, holy fuck me.
So I told this guy who messaged me on Instagram, who has sent me like chump change all the time, just like has sent me like $10 here and there. And he's like, mistress, like I'm in Sydney. I really want to meet up with you and do a cash meet. And a cash meet is where they meet you in public and they empty out their wallet and they give me all their money. And I met him in the back alley and you were watching from a window, which I didn't know, by the way, until I came back and everyone clapped for me. So I just got him to follow me, and it was – the alleyway was quite busy actually compared to what it normally is. So I get him into a little corner. I tell him to get on his knees, and he really likes being kicked in the balls. So I told him to spread his knees, and unfortunately he was wearing jeans, so I couldn't get him as hard as I would have liked to.
You had a couple of attempts though.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't just one kick. There was like three or four in there, and I was like, wow.
Yeah.
So she's angry today.
So I got him to get on his knees, spread his legs, get out the money for me, and I counted it in front of him, and I was like, do you really think this is all that I'm worth? Is this amount of money worth my time with you right now? It was like $150. Unfortunately, he didn't have more. Probably should have walked him to an ATM, but I'm not greedy. Yeah, so he gave me the $150 and then I kicked him as hard as I could in the testicles like he asked for and like he wants. And he has a particular thing about hearing the sound of spit in the back of your throat. Yeah, exactly like that. So I did that a few times and ordered him to open his mouth, and I spat in his mouth, a really nice one, and then like slapped him in the face and kicked him in the balls again. And I was like, okay, I'm going now. And then he was like, no, mistress, please one more. And I was like, yeah, okay. And when I kick him, he's like, oh, for so good, mistress, please put me in the hospital.
Even though I watch this from the window, like you explaining it, I'm like, no. Even though I watched everything happen.
Yeah.
It was quite entertaining, to be honest.
Yeah, he's really fun. I've had one ball kicking session when I went on tour in Melbourne at Fetish House.
Yeah.
That was really extreme. I've never had a ball busting session
As in, like, you actually busted a ball?
I didn't bust a ball in the session, but their fantasy is to have their balls busted and to be forever sterile. So this guy, I tied his hands up above him, and he was just in the middle of the room, and there was a chain hanging from the middle of the room that I tied his hands up to, and then I tied his legs apart so he couldn't shut his legs. He was kind of like dangling there from his wrists. And then I would just kick him with all my strength on the bare testicles. And his penis stayed hard the whole time. He really liked it. I've seen videos before but never experienced it myself of men who can come from being kicked in the balls or the gooch area.
Oh, did he do that?
He didn't come, which was unfortunate. He did come.
That'd be kind of a turn on. I'd be like, oh, I've never seen this before.
He did come at derailed. He did come at the end, but not from being kicked in the balls.
All this talk about kicking dudes in the balls in the dick. Do you let guys know about this when you go on dates? Because, like, if I was a dude now, I would be intimidated by you.
Yeah, so I'm a very open book. So I tell guys everything about my life if they ask me. If they ask the questions, then I tell them. I show them photos. I show them videos of stuff that I've done before just because I think it's cool and it's interesting and I like to share my work.
Wait, but we've got to make this clear. That the videos and photos that you're showing people, you have consent from these people to show these videos and
always,
photos.
Always, always. Yeah, so I never take videos and photos of people unless they say, yes, mistress. You can. I think in general, guys are intimidated by me because I come off as very confident and I know what I want in the bedroom and I know what I want in a partner and I communicate that. So and because I have a lot of experience sexually, I wasn't just a professional dominatrix. I worked in all dimensions of sex work except stripping. So I did erotic massage, I did full service. So I have a lot of experience with men and I feel like the men that I've come in contact with have this insecurity of I'm not going to be good enough for her, I'm not going to be able to satisfy her, I'm going to be boring for her because she's experienced all these other things. But they don't realize is at work it's very much, it's an emotional detachment. I'm not emotionally involved with them. Of course, there are some favorite clients that come in where I get really, really excited that they're there. And sometimes I even get turned on, but those are very few and far between.
Yeah. But I feel like to be able to do your job, you have to emotionally detach. Like, you can't have emotions for everyone. Like, how many clients would you have seen in one night?
It's never consistent. Sex work is never consistent.
Okay, what's a busy night? So
a busy night for a dom would be 5 clients. A busy night for a full service sex worker would be 10 clients up.
Even just if you take dating, and that's not even industry related.
Seeing that many people during the day does take quite a big energetic and emotional toll on you. And I didn't learn how to fill my own cup, so to speak, until towards the end of me leaving the industry. I wouldn't say that I'm in the industry now, although other people would because I still have an OnlyFans and I see 2 regular clients a week, but that's it.
Yeah.
Learning how to connect with yourself again at the end of every day is really, really important for your mental, emotional, and spiritual health within the sex industry. When you're involved with so many people and all of their different energies and emotions and the emotional detachment that you have to do in order to work with these people can put you in a state of dissociation. So when I was doing full service, I was in a serious relationship with someone. We were together for 5, almost 6 years when we broke up.
But he knew what you did for work?
I kept it a secret. For a while.
Yeah.
And then I did tell him.
How did you tell him?
Babe, I'm doing full service. I am working in a brothel right now. And I think it went straight over his head. And he was like, okay, well, as long as you're happy. And I was like, all right. And I didn't find out till after the relationship that he wasn't actually okay with a lot of the things that I was doing. But he just said it was in order to keep the peace. Yeah. And that's why our relationship fell apart. Because he wasn't able to communicate
how he felt.
Genuinely how he felt. Yeah.
Well, that's how I, like in the first episode I described like a lot of my relationships that you kind of watch it mentally eat them up inside and consume them, and they get so emotional that they either retaliate by going and cheating on you or like doing things in their mind that justifies you doing your work but it being okay in their personal life.
Literally, that's exactly what he did. He went and saw sex workers in establishments without asking me first because he felt like it was only fair because I had been seeing other people at work. So when I was doing full service and with him, it did take a major emotional toll because when I was having sex with these dudes, I just wasn't in my head. I was thinking about, I was counting the money.
Yeah.
And I was counting the hours until I could clock off. It's pure autopilot mode. Your body is physically there. The lights are on, but nobody's home.
But we're talking about like mentality. To sleep with or to be able to have sex, just even with one person 10 times a night, that's a lot. But to have sex with 10 people in one night, physically, your body would have to be drained and sore.
I didn't experience the soreness, but I know a lot of other
girls also very flexible. We're going to point this out.
Yeah, I am very flexible. Like,
if someone tried to pull my legs up 10 dudes in one night, I'd be like, get fucked. They'd be like, I want a refund. Can guys get refunds?
No.
Okay, just absolutely not. it's like, good. good to know.
When I was working in the brothel, it was never any like extravagant positions or anything like that. It was very just like like vanilla style sex, just like missionary things like that. It wasn't anything like extreme. But yeah, when you do have sex with that many people in one go, your body does energetically get tired, but also mentally you get tired. When I was at the establishment in the brothel, I had trained myself to dissociate during times of intimacy, and that carried on into my personal life. So when I would try and have sex with my partner at the time, I would have flashbacks of being in the brothel room. And then I would start to cry and I would have these really extreme emotional meltdowns. And unconsciously, I knew why it was happening, but consciously I didn't know. And I thought something was really wrong with me. But it was because I was so disconnected from pleasure that it was painful. So I had to do a lot of healing around my body and around my self-worth and healing around love, especially like self-love and self-respect. And I went and saw a shaman to do that.
Did you start in the brothel first, which then led to you wanting to become a dominatrix, or did you start as a dominatrix?
So I started as a dominatrix. How it started, I was living at home in a very small rural country town called Lithgow. I'd finished school. I was living at home with my single disabled mom who was clinically depressed and had a lot of mental issues, and it wasn't healthy for me to stay there. So I thought, I need to leave now, immediately, because this is just toxic for me.
Didn't she plant a seed in your head that you should be a dominatrix?
Yeah, I was going to mention this. So when I was like 9 or so, from memory, she said I would be a good dominatrix because I was such a bitch to my sister. And to be fair, I was a fucking cunt to my sister.
How did your mum know about dominatrix stuff?
I have no idea. I didn't even know what a dominatrix was when she said it, but the word stuck in my mind. And then when I was 18, I looked up what dominatrix was, and there wasn't really much coming up. I just searched Google images and I saw these like beautiful girls in all these cool leather latex outfits. And I was like, oh yeah, I could do that. So yeah, my mum planted the seed as me being a dominatrix. And when I needed to leave my home, I was like, well, what kind of job can I get that will make me a lot of money in a short period of time? And I thought sex work. And I thought, well, dominatrix, I've heard, is working with sexual energy. So I just Googled Dominatrix Sydney, and then the establishment that I first worked at came up and I emailed them. I just told them I was interested. They got back to me and was like, yeah, come in for an interview. So I went in for an interview. I sat down with the manager. She asked me a series of questions to gauge whether I was okay with that or not. And I said yes to it all, not knowing what she actually meant, just because I was so desperate to leave home and make money that I was like, yeah. And she was like, okay, cool. Well, we love your look. I think you'd be really suited here. We can't let you go into sessions by yourself. You'll need to sit in with senior mistresses and learn that way. And I was like, yeah, and fine. And then I started on the Monday. So I moved from my mum's house, which was 3 hours away from the dungeon, to my auntie's house, which was only an hour away. And I would go to the dungeon every day and sometimes do double shifts just to like make the money. And after about a month, I had enough money to move into my own apartment in Redfern, which was just up the road from the dungeon.
For you to be able to move out, because Sydney's really expensive, we need to make this clear. Sydney is one of the most expensive places
in the world.
Redfern. So in Redfern, a 3-bedroom townhouse for a room there with a bathroom, what's that, $450, $350 a week?
Well, at the time I was 18, so it was probably around 2014. It was only $290 a week. Yep. Now it would be more. I was making more money than what I knew I could do with it. Like, I had no idea what I could do with it. I wasted a lot of it.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, what did you do with your money? We've all been there.
I wasted so much money. Looking back on it, I think I did the maths one day and I was probably making like $100,000 a year minimum. Yeah. And I had nothing to show for it. I still don't have anything to show for
but
it.
But you still have to buy like a lot of your outfits. Like, I think people think a lot of your money does go on maintenance. So yeah, maintaining your hair, maintaining your skin, buying makeup. The amount of makeup we go through is ridiculous. And outfits, yeah, having to have multiple outfits, shoes even. Yeah. Yeah. Like a pair of boots, because I would say majority of your footwear would have been like knee-high boots.
Yeah.
They're like almost $200.
Yeah, sometimes more. And they don't last long, especially like if people are kissing.
Your knees.
Yeah, if people are kissing them, licking them, sucking them, and then having to properly sterilize and clean the boots, the vinyl just disintegrates on them. So you have to get a new one.
Yes.
New ones all the time. There was a lot of money that went into outfits and maintenance, makeup, nails. Because at the dungeon I was at, you always had to have your nails done.
Yeah.
Lipstick, nails, stockings, and a corset. That was the uniform. And if you didn't have any of those, they would fire you.
You have to tell people because you're allergic to latex.
I am allergic to latex, unfortunately.
Yeah, so what did you wear instead? Because everyone's idea, when I think of a dominatrix, I'm like...
And, like, I was vegan too, so I didn't wear leather or latex.
Oh, my God. What'd you wear?
So I would just wear PVC.
Fishnets.
I would just wear PVC. I would just wear PVC and the wet look outfits. But
wet look outfit? Yeah. What is a wet look outfit?
Like PVC or like pleather.
So I want to go back because you mentioned earlier that you got into NLP.
Yeah.
Because then you mentioned that first and then you brought up dominatrix and stuff like that. But do you think that, because I'm just speaking on like my experience and like I find understanding people and behavior patterns really interesting, because over the years from being at jobs, watching people, how they behaved, and there was like always the same characters at every job, that you would have picked up on people's behavioral patterns and with their like fetishes and desires, and then being able to persuade is Chloe's word. I use the word manipulate, but she always corrects me and says persuasion is such a nicer word. So I'm like, okay, persuasion. To persuade people, because there is an art to being able to get people to do what you want, especially in an unsafe environment without being controlling or dominating. So do you think like the situations over the years and the times and the encounters you had helped lead you to NLP?
Definitely. I only came across NLP and hypnosis because of a client. A client came in one day and asked me if I could hypnotize them. I knew nothing about hypnosis. I didn't know how to hypnotize anyone, but I was like, yeah, okay. And then When they were having a shower, I quickly YouTubed just a hypnosis track. So yeah, I YouTubed hypnosis and I got the gist of it. So I was like, okay, well, you have them imagine something. You get them into a relaxed state and get them to imagine whatever you want them to imagine. So I did that. It just sparked an interest in me. I was like, I'd love to learn more about hypnosis. So I Googled Hypnosis Sydney and came across this company called the Tad James Company. I think it was a 5-in-1 package, which was NLP, hypnosis, timeline therapy, coaching, and something else. I think it might have been like introduction to counseling. Yeah, I spoke to the people who worked there and I was like, wow, this is really cool. So I went to their first workshop where I did all the 5 topics that it went for like a week or something, and I was totally hooked by the end of the first day. I was like, this is for me. Because the speaker, the presenter, Adriana James, Dr. Adriana James, was speaking about all these things that I had researched, and people were listening to her and they were taking her seriously, and she wasn't getting in trouble for these very controversial topics. So I was like, I want to be just like her. So I ended up doing all of their classes. I ended up investing over $40,000 learning NLP,
wow,
hypnosis, timeline therapy.
And now she writes blogs for Cherry DTV.
And now I write blogs for Cherry DTV. But it's not that I don't practice NLP, because once you learn NLP, you use it every single day. Everyone uses NLP and hypnosis every single day. It's just that they're not aware of it.
Yeah.
And since learning it and becoming aware of it, my life is increasingly getting better and better. And I have so much more self-awareness, so much more self-regulation with my emotions. And I use hypnosis every night before I go to bed.
Yeah, that's really good that you do it on yourself.
Yeah.
Like affirmations?
No. So hypnosis is a process of following instructions. So I give my body — your body has a different mind. The mind of your body is your unconscious mind. So consciously, I give my unconscious mind commands or suggestions to relax. So I'll be like, okay, body, relax my feet, relax my calves, relax my thighs, relax my stomach, relax my back, relax my shoulders, my arms, my neck, and my face.
You think you could just make me an audio of this so you can tell me to relax before I go to bed? I feel like there's a lot of lazy people out there too that would be like, Chloe, tell me to relax before I go to bed.
Definitely, I can do that for you.
Oh, good. So from now on, Charity TV is going to start doing audios of Chloe's voice telling you to fucking go to sleep and relax.
Just relax.
Oh my God, this is Chloe's meditation hypnosis voice. You have a voice.
Yeah.
You have a hypnosis voice.
I feel like I'm being pushed more and more and more to start practicing hypnosis again.
Yeah, definitely, but not on me. Did I tell you about my hypnosis experience? I used to see a hypnotherapist.
Okay.
Phenomenal woman in Newcastle. She's older. Kerry, such a lovely old lady. She could literally have a conversation with you, and she would take in your behavioral patterns and keywords that you said, and she would be able to, at the end of the session, put them into a hypnosis kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like that.
So she would take everything that you said and formulate suggestions to embed into your unconscious when you're in a trance state.
Remember the ex where I hated sucking his dick because his cum was fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
So I got her to hypnotize me to want to suck his dick because he just kept fucking complaining about it. And I was like, it must be me. It's fucking me. I feel so bad, but fuck me. His cum was so fucking bad. I've got to describe it. It was like clad glue, but like a little bit like fluoro, kind of like... I'm scarred for life on cum. Like, I'm scared of cum now because of this.
No, you...
Okay, Chloe's going to hypnotize me next you said fucking
you
were, episode.
You said you've been scared since then, but there has been one person that
you've
enjoyed.
Yeah, let's not talk about that, dude. Yeah,
since then, only one.
Yeah, he came on my face. That was the first time someone's ever came on my face, and that's how I tasted his cum. It lasted about 2 weeks after hypnotherapy. I went home from hypnotherapy and I sucked his dick. He loved it. And I'm like... fuck me, hypnotherapy works, but it didn't work long term. So maybe if I had a couple of other sessions.
Yeah. Well, it lasted 2 weeks just from one session. I think that's a really good result. I've never done a quit smoking session. However, I've seen many of them and I've heard many success stories just from one session. Like you've been a smoker for 40 years. No problem. One session of hypnosis, you'll be fine. And then they never pick up another durry again.
A durry? For anyone who's not Australian listening to this, is a cigarette.
I know, that was very bogan of me to say durry.
It was. Chloe's had 2 wines and she relaxes and she's just like...
And then my small rural country town self comes out. Yeah, cunt.
catch me outside, I can't know about that. No, Americans don't like that. If there's any Americans listening to this, they'll be like, tainted by Chloe. Anyways, Chloe, I've got to ask you, what's your favourite part about working for Cherry DTV? And then what's your favourite part about working for me? And then what's your favourite part about me? No, just joking. Okay, what's your favourite part about working for Cherry DTV?
I love that every day is something new. Although I write a lot of blogs, however, each blog is on a different subject, so I'm always learning when I'm working. And I think learning is a very high value of mine in life. I love to learn. I love to discover things that I didn't know before or get a deeper perception of something that I thought I knew everything of. So getting to learn.
Earlier I said, and now you get to write blogs for Cherry DTV. Like, it was kind of like demeaning. But what I meant is that all the knowledge you've taken from like NLP, and Chloe just loves to read. I swear she does it all the fucking time. She just reads.
I read a lot.
She reads. She can regurgitate what she reads. I, on the other hand, do not like to read. I like to listen.
Do you want
to
know
like
why?
To watch.
I didn't always have a good memory, and it was because of hypnosis. So hypnosis is good for so many things, but the greatest benefit of hypnosis is it connects you and forms a really good relationship with the conscious and the unconscious mind. And that really is just the left and right side of your brain. So because I have a very solid relationship with my unconscious mind, and the unconscious mind is the domain of all memories, I'm able to easily find what I'm looking for.
Whatever I throw at you, you pick up very fast, and you're like willing and eager to like learn and do things, which is great, because there's not a lot of people out there that are willing to like grow and adapt or just be like, okay, I'll learn, I'll do it, I'll get it done. Like, which is really good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another one of my highest values in life is personal development or evolution, to evolve. I love change. I love to notice changes in myself. I like to get better and better. As soon as I think that I'm the best, there's another mountain peak to climb.
I'm going to ask you the same question you asked me last week. This question, which you would have probably written down your answer somewhere and studied.
I haven't actually.
Okay, let's get into it. What are the three most important things you've learned from life so far?
Number one, be kind. Be kind. Be nice to people, because there's too much negativity and hate in the world not to be.
What about if you're teaching someone a lesson?
No.
Come on, Chloe.
Kill them with kindness. Teach them a lesson in sandwich feedback.
I don't agree with this sandwich feedback thing. Everyone always tells me. I'm like, people, especially, no, I'm not going to say that.
Okay, so sandwich feedback is important, because when you go into a negative state, you lose all rational and logical thinking. The executive part of your brain shuts down. So if you're just telling someone everything they've done wrong, it's not actually going in, and they won't get better afterwards because their brain actually isn't working properly.
But if I'm telling them two things they've done right, they're just going to pay attention to what they've done right and not what they're doing wrong.
No, well, you don't want to tell them everything that only the things they've done right. You want to say, okay, well, number one, so sandwich feedback is good, bad, or good, what you need to improve, and then overall positive. So like positive, you did this really well and this, I liked this. Then improvement, you could improve on this, this and this in this way. And then, but overall, I think you did a really good job. And when you implement those improvements, you're just going to get better and better.
The amount of sandwiches people expect me to give out is ridiculous.
You do, you boo.
I should have opened a sandwich shop. It is, if you look at it, because I know it looks, from maybe your point of view, it's like really.
Sometimes you've almost made me cry, Dana.
Yeah, but did you take on the feedback? Did you make changes?
I did. I got better.
Oh, but, so the negative work.
But not everyone is as strong-willed as I am.
There is a lot of people that are like tender, is that I know you can take it. Like, and I think this is really harsh though, because I do see a lot of females towards other females give a lot of like hard love. Like, it's like mums and daughters. Like, the mums are always harder on the daughters instead of the sons.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost kind of like, it feels like that. I do the same with Jules as well. We're all tough, independent individuals. It's not like you're a soft, anxious, you're not that type of person. So because if I didn't approach you sternly, you wouldn't respect what I was saying and you'd be like, fuck off. So, yeah. Anyway, so we're going to go on to the second most important thing that you've learnt from life so far.
My second most important thing that I've learned in life so far is that there's no failure. There's only feedback. So if you think you've failed, instead of feeling really shit about yourself because you haven't done it in the way that you wanted to, take it as a lesson to learn from and say, well, okay, it didn't turn out how I wanted to, but this is how I'm going to do it differently. So get the learnings that you need in order for when you do it the next time, it's going to be even better. And then 3, be ecological with your choices. So ecological means the study of consequences. So before I do anything, I ask myself, is this good for me? Is it good for others? Is it good for the environment or the community? And is it good for the planet?
How many times do you ask yourself that a day?
Well, I just consider, like, is the action I'm going to do going to benefit all those 3 aspects of life? So instead of buying one of those 15-cent plastic bags that's not going to be ecological for the environment or the planet, I'm going to remember to take my reusable Hessian bag to the shops and put my groceries in there instead.
Well, Chloe, that wasn't so nerve-wracking today, was it?
No.
After I gave you 2 wines, you really eased up.
I'm crunk.
I got Chloe crunk. I just want to say thanks for really opening up and sharing today about your history, about how you got started in the industry and everything. And it really kind of gave an insight into what's coming on the next episode.
Yes, next episode we're going to talk about kinks and fetishes.
You only shared some stories today, but like next week.
I've got many more.
Oh my, yeah, you have so many more.
6 years of stories.
6 years of stories to come in the next episode. And we'll see you then.